Alright. What else? I haven't been writing many essays lately. Of course, this last week has been kind of stressful for the whole... had a lot of things to do. Not a lot of time for composition and stuff like that. But not really any ideas either. And typically, I still have the ideas. I'll throw them down, and then I'll get back to them later, and I haven't even had any ideas. I was going back and trying to discover exactly what I changed in my life that got me away from them. And I think it was me cutting off Alex Joe. And that's, that's rough stuff. But I don't want Alex Jones to end up being the fodder of what I get into, you know. I like to think that my stuff is a little bit intelligent. Not saying that Alex Jones isn't an intelligent guy, but, you know, he doesn't reach for that intelligent audience. He's more of a common man, which is great, you know. That's the crying of it all. But I'm hoping to attract a more interesting, smarter audience. How about that? You know, I really want this to morph into something. I'm wanting to get to the fulfillment of my patriarchal blessing, and I'm sorry. Every time, like yesterday, it was Sunday. I'm not sure exactly how canonical this thing is. I went to the church website. Of course, all the jobs at the church are in Utah, you know, and there's a couple of jobs that look a little intriguing, you know, kind of a mid-level network operations engineer type of a position. I might still apply for it today, I don't know. But honestly, it wouldn't pay a lot better than what I make now. And right now, things are kind of... aren't doing particularly well. But it's monetarily. At least once I get out of debt this year, which is fantastic. And, you know, I need to do my part by basically just shutting down and not doing much of anything. Economizing as much as I can. Which, you know... I can do that. Well, regardless. Anytime I try that, I just use it to talk myself out of it. You know, the answer isn't going to come from, you know, taking the next step up in a career or something like that. You know, I feel like it needs to be a bigger jump. And when I look at myself with computers, for instance, I end up depending a heck of a lot on the Spirit to help me. And makes me look better than I am. You know? I don't know how that correlates, you know. You go, well, you get a certain gift, certain skills, and you go, well, I don't feel like I'm really accessing a skill. It may very well be a gift. But, not anything, you know, I find myself bored with it, which is the biggest problem with my, not problem, the attribute of my kids. I get bored really easily too. You can see it especially in the twins. Little hyperactive guys. Anyway, so I'm thinking about something to listen to that would be a little more thought-provoking. So I turn back to Econ Talk, which is really, really excellent podcast, a weekly. Dan Carlin's a little less regular, and but always good thought-provoking, provocative type stuff, which is nice for me. I do think my writing is the key. I think just the computer stuff. I've been looking at it more and more as the day job. So, I don't know. I was just remembering what people say about writing. Those who are, you know, really well, I think people are easy to get really big on themselves to really say, you know, oh well, I've got these skills and I've got this talent, and, you know, you don't. And you're going, so how did you stumble on this stuff, you know? Often they tell you to do something that they never did. I remember late at night listening to Larry King. Larry King used to be on the radio. Now he doesn't do anything as far as I'm aware of. He's retired finally. He's rather old to begin with. So it wasn't a bad time to retire at all. When he was younger, probably in his late 40s, early 50s, and he was top dog of syndicated talk radio, as far as I don't know if it was syndicated or not, but he this guy called him and he was saying, "Oh, how do I become like you?" And he said, "You don't have the voice. Here's how the voice, you have to understand. I started out in this thing, and I'm sorry, I do a really bad Larry King impersonation. And you gotta have the voice. So this guy, he didn't have much of a presence on here, and I'm not saying I do either. If he was, he says, "Well, you gotta know the elements of communication. There you gotta perfect them." And you're going, you know what? I think he was mostly talking, as they say, smack. I think when it comes to, artists, front men, stuff like that, success that they have is mostly due to lightning. But I've also seen people where it doesn't happen. Like, let me take another obscure reference. Chevy Chase. He was a guy that got popular very quickly on Saturday Night Live, the first season of Saturday Night Live, which produced so many big people. Lately he got he was offered his own talk show. It seemed like a lot of people were ramping up these kinds of talk shows. Some of them make it, some of them don't. I've got to be really honest, I don't know at all what makes for a good talk show host and what doesn't. I really don't. Ellen DeGeneres, openly gay person. I don't know what is the difference between her and Caroline Ray, who, as far as I know, died. I don't know what the difference is between that person and five other people, who've had shows and didn't make it. And I don't even care to speculate. It usually has almost nothing to do with anything, You can't put your finger on it to save your life. Although pundits will say all the time, because it really ends up being kind of a conspiracy of rationalization. Oh, we know exactly why it worked. And you go, half of it may be, you know, in their management, you know. Half of it may be in office politics. You know, it really isn't a question of. As far as I know, all these shows get decent ratings. You know, it's not ever going to compete with a big time, you know, dramatic show, for instance. You know, they're just not operating in the same realm. But, you know, this is so. When people come up, they say, well, how'd you become a success? I want to be a success like you. And then they start telling you what they think it is. Usually it's a bunch of hooey, I think. You know, I think writers are the same way. And I am pleased with the authenticity of some that say, you know what, I don't have a clue. I sat down, I wrote some stuff, I wrote some other stuff, and one of them took hold. And you go, I didn't think it was my best stuff, but for some reason, it was this amazing thing. You know? There's people that say, follow a formula, be, you know, learn how this stuff is done. There's classes and clinics all over the world on the subject of how to become a successful writer. You know, and they teach various formulas for doing this. You know, get a whole bunch of writers together, and they critique each other. It's a really cool way to make money, as far as I'm aware of. I mean, I don't think much of it. It's like the blind leading the blind. Or somebody who says, yeah, I published this, and this. Now I'm all washed up at the age of 30, you know, because... And I decided to start leading writing workshops, and you go, you know, that's why when people say my daughter wants to go to school for creative writing, and I think that's like going to school to learn how to breathe. I said, Brenna, you don't go to school to learn creative writing. Oh, yes, but it's all about who you know in the publishing industry. It's all about this and it's all about that. And you go, you know what? I said, I don't see it. I said, you don't even have to go to school to be a writer. Because, in fact, most of your successful creative writers, I said, they never went to school for it. Never. They went to school for other things. Oh, well, some of them went to school for English. And you go, in default of anything else, they're going to college anyway. You know, their parents wanted them to go to college, so they went to college and decided to settle for English literature or something, you know. I said, not, you know. You know, I'm not saying these are bad things, but you know what? If you just want to spend your time reading and writing reports about other people's writing, do it in your spare time. It's a lot cheaper. Just because having that to create is worthless. It's a rich debutante degree. Are you a rich debutante? Yeah. Why are you following them? Do you want their life? Anyway, you know, and I'm no, you know, I'm no, I'm no amazing guy. You know, people say, well, how's your staying power? You know, you wrote these so short stories, and then you stopped. Then you wrote these essays, and then you stopped. I said, one doesn't know if they're compelling or not because, frankly, you know, you didn't market them. You didn't put them out there to see if it caught fire or anything. So you just, you know. You did them and you moved on. I think, oh, yeah. And you go, so what on earth would we want to do backing you? You know, we think if we could sell one of your short stories to, like, movies or something, that might be, you know, but that's a one-time shot, you know. We don't play that game, you know. It's kind of like working for the record industry. I said, just because you put out an album doesn't mean we're going to do another one. There's plenty of people produce a popular song. Just as some people can create a career on 1, 2, 3, 4 songs. So that's, you know, there's nothing to say if that can't happen. You know, management may end up being kind of the thing. I don't know. Regardless, I don't know what to do about all this stuff. If that's what Brenda wants to spend her money on, that's fine. You know, she isn't the type of person that really listens particularly. You know, and I don't want to be the person that tries to be all prudent about things, you know, and say, well, you're gonna get an education, you need to get an education, something that makes money. Half of college for a girl is to go out and figure out who you're going to marry. But I was a very standoffish person, so it's like, I don't even know if college is going to help. I don't know. But I know she's got to get out of here. And maybe that's a good reason to go to Utah. Chances of meeting a guy that'll take her to the temple go up exponentially in those kinds of places. Someplace with some more Mormons. I may have done my family a horrible disservice staying out in the sticks. I don't know. You'll have to ask. I have to ask God about that. I really don't know. So, anyway. And I can't deliver any kind of idea what advice do you have? I don't have any advice that I can't say. Anyway, so, and I don't think I tell anybody to follow my lead. For saying what to do. I said, I get so confused sometimes. And I don't know what to pursue. And they go, well, you know, there's a concept in Mormon theology called, how you how you know if something is the right decision to make or not. They said if you pray about it, and you know, you'll either get a confirmation or you get a stupor of thought. And you go, my life is a stupor of thought. You know, I don't know. I keep acting. I don't know if it's a good thing to do, but you know, I'm feeding my family. I'm not getting to where I need to be. And it said the Spirit would guide me, and I'm hoping I'm guided. At least it reminds me of stuff. She ended up being my advisor, which I think is right. I never forget what she reminded me of yesterday, last, whatever. I like to have clear signals from above, but either Heavenly Father doesn't do clear signals, or I just am a horrible interpreter of these things. I need to ask her today. I got a day off from work. It's a holiday. Nobody else has it, so it's just me and Lee today. Doing whatever it is we do. So, I'll ask her what she was talking to remind me what was. What she was telling me. So anyway, yeah, I'm gonna try to get back into trying to feed my mind a little bit more. I think exercise in the morning helps a lot. We're hitting the coldest time of the year. Last half of January into the first part of February is usually the coldest part of the year. We're through this and then we'll go into March and that's when things start kind of warming back up. Anyway. So, I don't know what to do. I feel like trying to get ahead in computers is incremental. And I'm just not inspired by it. You know? I'm not getting rid of the day job. It was tempting to. I almost did. At least it talked me down from that one. You know? For better or worse. And, I I don't know if I'm just a psychotic and I should feel lucky that I've got what I've got. And that, you know, my patriarchal blessing was meant for a version of me that isn't now, you know. I don't know what to do with patriarchal blessing. I worry that it's one step in the wrong direction at a critical moment, you know, that you may not even have known about. And you might as well just wad up the thing and just throw it away for the fact that you're off course. And it doesn't matter, you know. You can't have those things anymore, you know. I guess that's almost kind of the danger of your possibilities. Is that for most people, that's all it ever is. It's just a possibility. One road out of a million. And, you know, who knows at what point you got off that road or something. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like, oh no, it's still available to you. Other times it's like, no, it's not yet. This is, you know, so, simply go on. You go, you know, you gotta put this life into perspective. You know, it isn't the do-all be-all. You know, the most important function of this life is to be righteous and to try to do what God asks you to do. And, you know, the real reward of this life follows it, you know. You don't get it during this life particularly. Am I a big fish in a little pond? Yeah. You know, and I hope I'm not being cocky by saying that. So you know what? Lisa and others and I, choices put us in this little pond and kept us here. You know, there were several opportunities to not be here anymore. You know, I had the job up in Los Alamos. If I would have hung in there, most likely I would have got myself into a much better paying job, and with lots of upward mobility that way. But I chose against it. I chose to go with something that I could do from Tucumcari. And so I'm sure the Lord will come back and say, hey, you know, I said, I don't understand what you're grousing about. I said, you constantly chose to come back to Tucumcari. I said, well, do I spend too much time trying to please Lisa? And that, you know, and I told her, you know, Lisa, I said that once, if we can't ever get the kids gone, when the boys go on their missions or whatever, and we feel a little bit more free, and you go, what do you hope we're going to do? And Lisa's like, oh no, when that happens, I'm going to be nearly 60. And we go, yeah. And what that's going to do is, we're going to sit right here and just, you know, cruise the rest of our lives and who can carry it. Don't even, not even interesting to me. But you know, I guess it really doesn't matter where you are. Oh, that's okay. We'll keep working on the project. I want to get the Ascent family project through to completion and put it out there. See what happens. You know, I don't know. You know, for all I know, it's a different place. A different place will call me and say, hey, would you like to come over here and help us do what you said? And you're going, well, I'm not some kind of a weird mystic leader, as far as I'm aware of. No, no, just come. You know, the invitation. We want to try this. And you go, well, okay. Heck. I wrote it to try and get with a group of people that wanted to do this. A terrestrial, or at least what I have pondered is a terrestrial way of looking at governance. Whether it's Shetland or whether it's some other place, you know. I said that's fine. And maybe I'm just psychotic, okay? So there's all kinds of troubles in my background. Yeah, we're going to continue the project, even if it doesn't go the way we hope. We'll see where it leads. See where it leads. Oh. Well, I'm not really picking up anything now. Solarcast. The whirligig is barely turning, which means we have a very light breeze. Cold. Below freezing, but it's always below freezing in the morning. Let's see. What do we have? Anyway, so breeze this way. And it's icy. It seems like it's humid. A little more humid than normal. And so any little breeze is cold, you know, you feel it on the face. So yeah, you know, I was doing my essay writing just in spare time just to stay busy. It can continue doing that, you know. I keep refining, I hope it's refining, my publishing process. By and large, I'm, you know, I've got my DocuWiki, which is where I do most of my composing, and it holds all the stuff. There's a section of it that's, well, there was a section of it that's a little more public. Now I've kind of put that down a notch. The blogger blog, Quixen, Quixen, .blogspot.com, is the real publishing arm, you know. Talking about you know, which is where the essays go, stuff like that. I like DocuWiki for composing. I was using Scigo for a while, which actually writes and reads ebook format straight out of the gate, but didn't like it much because it was a project that seems to be kind of winding down for lack of taking hold. I guess these guys were hoping it was going to morph into something amazing, that it would take hold and do this amazing stuff. And it's just kind of a tweak of a word processor. So you end up, you know, your product competes against a word processor with a little ebook creation add-on to it. So it starts being a little redundant. I like DocuWiki because it can do things in several different forms. Like right now, I can tell it to generate an a PDF, you know, actually generates quite a nice PDF when push comes to shove. So that works for me. Anyway, I guess this recording is about the care and feeding of Jay. Jay the purposeful, Jason the aesthetic, working towards some larger goal all the time. hopefully a larger goal of God's own make. And anyway, so I'm just barely getting to the very top of the walk before I start making my way down. Things to say. Oh, I got some things fixed on the house radio station. I needed to put some incidental music. Got some guy who throws medieval guitar tracks. He does it in the public domain, so I grabbed those. And that's the incidental music. Got some between the Global Podcast, the BBC Global Podcast, and when I switch on Old Time Radio, which every morning is Jack Benny. And really light stuff. Really, and cute and funny. So but yeah, in the way of a kind of inspiration that brings on essays and pulls together stuff like what do you call it? Oh, the Atheist Lament, or you know, Enclaves of Righteousness, things like that. These things really don't you know, Jack Benny doesn't put the thought into the mind that makes those things happen, you know. I'm sure at the time he was the working man's you know, humor and comedy and pastime. When you'd get home from a hard day of grueling, rather monotonous work, you would sit down and you'd laugh at Jack Benny, who was better off than you were, got to hobnob with big people, but you know, was portrayed as this guy with problems, just like you, you know, tightwad. Couldn't get things to happen. Mostly a tightwad. That was his big thing. Was that he was just cheap. And he made an art form out of being cheap. And everybody knew it, you know. Oh yeah, you're so cheap. Became the interesting take on the whole thing of the undeserving rich, you know. popular people. So you go, they didn't become popular due to anything, you know. Sadly, I think our whole society is like that, you know. These aren't men of accomplishment. These were people who were blessed. These were people who had more of a silver spoon stuck in their mouth, you know. And you just have to shrug a lot. That's just the world we live in, you know. So, anyway, interesting world. Yeah, it really brings up the whole thing of, yeah, is there a middle class? And you go, it's shrinking, that's for sure. It says, it really is becoming, you know, your mid-level managers are being treated and are getting paid, you know, lower management these days, for the simple reason that you can do it, you know. And they go, oh, I got my MBA. And you go, oh, yeah, you and 100,000 other people. Who cares? You know. It's one of the litmus tests for being able to have a position like this. But honestly, you know, thousands and thousands of candidates come walking in here bearing the same credential. And I'm supposed to pick from you. And that, you know, and that means there's not a scarcity of labor going on here. Kind of like Russia with doctors, you know. They trained up so many people to be doctors that doctors are a dime a dozen. You know, to be a medical doctor was to be nothing. You know, you can find medical doctors cleaning streets because that's what the state put them to, because they just, you know, you don't need that many doctors. I don't even know if they had nurses, for just saying, no, we use doctors for nurses. But then you say, well, the system really doesn't work like that, you know? Start identifying stuff like that. So, you know. And for all I know, they don't produce doctors at all now. Oh, we'll get our doctor somewhere else. Most doctors where I come from third world countries. You know? It's interesting. Probably because you're an English-speaking white person. I said, that puts you up in an echelon beyond symptom care. You know? So, you know, it's not worth getting into the class warfare. The only thing that it has to do is the rich need to help support the poor, you know. And I think it ends up being kind of the outline of we all need each other, you know. Whether one profession makes a lot of money and another profession doesn't, really becomes almost immaterial. More in relation to How do we treat each other? You know? How do we take care of people? How we treat them. And frankly, our system doesn't treat people very nicely at all. You know? The rich are virtual gods, and everybody else are their servants. Who are paid for their service, or who are compensated, or who have good life at the whim of that rich person. You know, and we start getting the stuff you used to see in the Dark Ages. You know, where rich, wealthy people will actually take you on as a slave, and you will give them everything that you have, and you are virtually their property. And you go, boy, is that not what God ever intended? Although God, doesn't immediately seem to get too weird about it. You know, he wasn't calling out for that kind of social justice. Particularly. I mean, if people had asked God his opinion, if I asked God what they should do, he would offer something for them to do. I think that's where the enclaves of righteousness and little bits of Zion come from, is they come from circumstances where people come together and say, we want to follow God, you know. We want to know what God would like us to do, and we want to, you know, position our lives that way. And that's when some pretty amazing things happen. You know, I think the Nephites accomplished that several times. When Mosiah decided to set up judges not to have a king anymore. That was a pretty big move for a guy as a king, and he was perfectly willing to the people wanted one of his sons to be the king, and he was a little worried because his sons had been bad kids, and he was afraid that they would fall back into their evil if they had the power. So that's kind of where the judges came from. This is not a new idea. This is basically what had happened among the children of Israel. You know, after Joshua, I don't know if he was considered the first judge, you know, but they had judges after that, and judges were appointed by the prophet and acclaimed by the people, kind of a common consent sort of a thing. And so the clamor just came up that they wanted a king just like every other country had, you know. Wanted to be like everybody else, wanted to fit in. But God specifically told them, no, be different. And that's kind of what, I don't know if that's what the ascended family hopes to become, is something along that line. You know, to say that we would do this stuff. Of course, I found it interesting. I listened for a long time to medieval history, and one of the bigger figures is Alfred the Great, the great Appalachian person in England. He was Anglo-Saxon. He was toward the very end of it, before the Normans came and established kind of the England that we see today is mostly a Norman thing, which is interesting because Normans are basically settled Vikings. Anyway, so I was listening to Cleon Skaus, and one of the great constitutional writers of the 20th century. He went in a little bit in the 21st, but not much at all. Before he passed away. He seemed to have a great respect for the kind of administration, the kind of public governance that was set up by Alfred and by the Anglo-Saxons. And he said, this is really a great model, and it seems like they took it from the Bible, you know, try as much as possible to mirror the kind of governance that they had in the old days. Children of Israel, you know, going through the wilderness with God and Moses being their guide. And and perhaps that's what he credited the time to. And I think he was thinking that was going to be the way it was going to be, which is quite a good studious way of looking at it. You know, is it right or not? Who knows? You know? Is it better than other things? Oh, surely. You know? Keeping it small. You know, I keep it within the family realm. It really is kind of just a devolution of that. A devolution of power down to family, which is usually far lower than most people want to take it. They don't trust families. You know, families are falling apart. You know, that does need to be the place where the true power lies. We don't like it. We don't like what some families do. And you go, yeah, it's a lack of trust. You would rather have a community buffer. You don't trust that particularly. Not big enough, you know. People want big government. And I think that's our downfall. Is that concept of having, you know, a big government. They trust scale. Menorahs to left. Gracious. Okay. Oh, I'm back. To think about breakfast. Stop my recording. Upload it, most likely.